Well, Dodge Rose is a startling debut novel from a young Sydney writer named Jack Cox, and there's a real buzz around this book. It's a strange book. It's written in the modernist style you'd associate with James Joyce or maybe Samuel Beckett. There are no talking marks, and you have to attend closely to know who's speaking and when it's the narrator who's talking to us. And the book becomes increasingly ambitious and experimental the further you read. But the wonder of this is that if you yield yourself to this book, it will speak to you, and the reward is dreamlike. We are being taken beneath the appearance of things. The novel's first half is set in 1982. Eliza has arrived in Sydney to finalise the estate of her aunt Dodge, who has died. Well, obviously she's died. And she meets up there with Maxine, who has lived with Dodge for years as Dodge's adopted daughter. And so Maxine believes, with very good reason, that she will inherit some of the estate. But she soon discovers that nothing is clear, not even her own identity. Jack, welcome to Books and Arts.
Thank you.
So this book is in two halves. Can we explain a little bit more about what happens in the first half? The two women, that's Eliza and Maxine, go to Dodge's solicitor.
Yes, and they find that he doesn't have a will for her, and so they try to make as much profit from the estate for themselves as they can. But everything they try to take possession of is either missing or already owned by someone else, until they end up with the ambiguous prospect of auctioneering off the flat's contents.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. In fact, they go on a paper chase that takes them into the basements of all sorts of marvellous buildings in Sydney. Did you go to these places yourself?
Yes, I just did what they did. I went in and I pulled out one of those old folios and I copied down what I found.
So in a way, they're kind of mirroring the image that the author has already, or mirroring the actions that the author has already undertaken.
Yes.
Now, Jack, I'd love you to give the audience a sense of how beautiful your reading is, how rich and strange, as Shakespeare says in The Tempest, how rich and strange this world is you take us to. There's a little reference to radio, which I thought would be a nice link, a nice way in. Who's speaking here as the reading begins?
Maxine, and she's speaking about her time with Dodge in the flat in King's Cross.
All right, just take it away.
When the radio broke, our grave was really dug. All day Dodge listened to ABC Classic FM, the melodic fog rolling first thing over the living room. I would leave her for school standing by the window in a slate-coloured skirt, maybe, and a pinstripe blouse, swirling the insides of her cup to some semi-heard fugue. At times she would say, as if out of nowhere, "Ah, Sibelius," and with an effort I would recover a noise passed almost out of my perception, like surf or the rumble of traffic in the street below. Over dinner, the radio was retuned, and Dodge chewed vacantly through the news, but I had been waiting all afternoon for that static fissure and the piping voice come sudden as a bat got in the window that flaps around the room trying to recover the open air. Not a batter what's at the other. I came back from school one day to dead silence. "The radio is broken," she said from the sofa where she appeared to have been watching herself in the reflection of her shoes. She must have sensed my disappointment in the evenings because she came up with an incentive for return. She bought poppy seed cakes by some kind of correspondence, and we had afternoon tea. She would pick an album to browse, and if she'd left a turd, she would be tender, though I would know then there is a turd. "What happened to the piano?" I asked one afternoon, my eyes having fallen on the angle of unfaded wallpaper underlapping the bookcase. "Fell to pieces," said Dodge. "That's impossible," I said. "Ah," she breathed, and her eyes widened. "That's right, Mother smashed it up."
"What for?"
"Well," her voice trailed, "she was very upset. Perhaps because the pilot died, beaten by his vans over the sea. She was a passionate woman, my mother, a bitter fit." "Did you learn to play?" I asked. Dodge looked surprised and raised her hands. She twiddled them over the air. "Well, yes, I was very good. I'm sorry I can't play for you. Might have been your schoolmistress. It is a pity about the radio. I ought to buy a new one." She didn't, and a pall of silence settled down beneath the chatter. Silence settled down like dust.
Jack Cox reading from his novel Dodge Rose. Now that ties into the other great theme in your book, the kind of subtext of the book, which is the legal system of New South Wales. And this is what gives you a kind of intellectual grounding, actually. And that groundwork billows out, comes to the surface in a very long passage, which I found completely intriguing. And so Maxim experiences the complexity of landlord herself, actually, as she works through the paperwork that might sort out the issue of her inheritance?
Well, what she has to do is she has to work backward through these false layers of her inheritance, first trying Dodge's bank account and then her real estate, and finally gambling on the sale of her furniture, which, as movable property, is already pointing her towards her own family origins in the Rose household. What Maxine, who's cut off from all origins, has to come into possession of is her name. She has to name herself No One. What happens then, though, that's the question.
Yeah. So in an elusive and poetic way, Maxine's experience of dispossession and the sense that she's a person without a name somehow evokes the idea that this has happened to a whole population in this very territory, in the colony of New South Wales, 100 years earlier. And the people who are the dispossessed are still all around us.
Yes.
Now, what draws you to this mode of writing, Jack? This mode of writing that we associate with Joyce and with Beckett. I mean, some people might say that this is an experiment whose time has passed, that it was an interesting diversion. Yes, Joyce did it, but in the end it was a dead end because, you know, few other writers have picked this up. Why are you returning to that experimental form now in the 21st century?
Well, when something appears outdated, there is the question, what did it promise that was not realised?
So what makes you think, though, that this form is still valid?
I think that maybe the one thing that makes the novel still a valid form is its topicality in the strict sense of the word. The novel basically takes stock of the place it's taking place in, even if this is ultimately an empty skull.
So, Jack, I'm interested in what it was that motivated you to sit down and write this book in such a difficult and challenging mode, mode, it turns out, has met with enormous joy from the critics, including your current interviewer. For you, was it actually a way of doing history? Did you find that fiction helped you illuminate historical questions in some way?
Yes. One way that I think fiction can intervene in questions of history is in its anecdotal nature, in the sense that it's about things unpublished. Even if in the case of the historical record its material is unpublished material, it can take this up in an anecdotal way and unsettle it. The promise of fiction is the promise of construction.
Jack Cox, thank you for being my guest here this morning. It's been a total pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
Jack Cox, and his novel is called Dodge Rose. It's published in Australia by Text and in the USA by Dalkey Archive Press.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.